This show is not a substitute for professional counseling. The views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Further, any opinions heard on the show are not meant to replace professional health care and mental health treatment. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional help and are a UA student, you are encouraged to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, it's a little past 6 o'clock tonight and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting live from the WVUA studio, 90.7 The Capstone, on the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. BJ Gunther, and I'm the host of the show. In case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, in particular UA students. And you can listen to us live each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM or online at www.wvuafm.ua.edu, or you can download the Crimson White app and click on the 90.7 live streaming link. Tonight, we're going to do something a little bit different. We won't be taking questions tonight, but let me remind you, this is not a call-in show, so if you have questions, just hold those, because we don't take call-ins at the station, and we don't take questions at this time via telephone. So, but you can email me if you have any ideas about the show, because this is only our second show of the year, of the semester, actually. So if you've got any fun ideas that you think we haven't covered, and you'd like to hear more information about a topic, please email those to me at brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu, and I'll consider using your idea for the show. Tonight's show, as I mentioned, it's going to be a little bit different because I recorded it about a week ago due to our guest schedule, and so we'll play the interview for you with a few breaks in between, and then I'll be back at the end of the show to give you some information about next week's show. Tonight's show, though, is about PTSD, a story of hope and resiliency. And my guest is Amy Ostreicher, who contacted me, I guess it was a little over a year ago, with her story. And it's just a fascinating story. She has a website, and she also goes around the country doing speaking engagements, especially at colleges, because what happened to her took place right before she entered college. But you'll hear that in the interview, and I hope you enjoy tonight's show. I'll be back at the first break.
First of all, tell our listeners, I mean, I have gone to your website, which is amyoes.com, and it is fantastic. It gives a plethora of information, not only about you and your story, but about topics that you have spoken on, for instance, like your TED Talk. And most everybody now knows about TED Talk. So give us a little bit about yourself. Tell us, where do you live right now? Like, where are you right now?
Well, at the moment, I am in Connecticut.
Okay. Is that where you live?
Yep, I'm in like Connecticut, New York, back and forth, but basically East Coast.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about your journey and... actually, the title of this show is PTSD, A Journey of Hope. Why did you name it that?
Oh, wow. You know, that of my show?
Well, the actual title of the subject that we're talking about tonight, not just...
Yes. I mean, it really is a journey of hope. I mean, PTSD is definitely a detour. I would say if we just follow that, you know, path long enough, it eventually will, you know, we can make meaning out of it. And I think that's why hope is so important. So I guess it makes more sense in the context of my own story.
It's pretty incredible. Your story's pretty incredible. Where do you want to start?
Well, you know, I was kind of your typical musical theater geek. I had her pretty all planned out that I, you know, was going to go to college to study musical theater, and that was going to be my life. And I was very driven, very focused, and so I had a very prestigious voice teacher when I was 15, and he was really my mentor, and then when I was 17, he started molesting me, and so I completely, left my body. I was in total shock, to the point where I don't even remember anything that happened, and I was just so numb.
Yeah.
And I didn't even understand, like, what was going on. I thought something was wrong with me until, I physically just, could not take it anymore. I was anxious and, really run by fear of these secrets that were becoming larger than I was. So I kept that secret in for months. And then in the April of my senior year, I finally told my mother. And we were going to, get therapy and all those kind of things. And then 2 weeks after that, I just had a really bad stomach ache that wasn't going away. And my father just decided, let's just go to the emergency room just in case, something. And I guess my cheeks actually perforated on the way there. There was so much internal pressure. Mm-hmm. I got sepsis from a blood clot. And I just remember being a lot of pain. And so apparently when the doctors cut into me, when the surgeons did, there was so much pressure that my stomach just literally, it hit the ceiling of the operating room. And so
hard to digest, no pun intended,
It really is. I know, because it's not a condition or an illness or anything like that. It was just kind of a freak thing. And if I had gotten there minutes later, the fluid would have gone to all of my internal organs and I would have died. And I had just gotten my college acceptance letters. I'd never been sick my entire life. So imagine just waking up, months later, totally clueless. Kind of coming in and out of sedation. Wondering what the heck is going on. And so then eventually the doctor told me that I didn't have a stomach anymore and I couldn't eat or drink. And he didn't know if that would ever happen again. So talk about waking up in the twilight zone, facing
entirely
new.
Mm-hmm.
It was just confusing. I wasn't even to that point yet because, it was really just kind of shock. I was just in my high school classroom. It was it didn't really sink in yet. And then, not being able to have an ice cube or anything. It's one thing not being able to eat and drink when you're in the hospital and you're kind of in your nest and you tell yourself you're sick, I guess. But then, I was discharged months later because medically I was stable. I just was not perfectly reconstructed yet. So I was just basically told, I was kicked out of my old life, not cut, not a job, I was weak. And they're like, okay, go home now and live a life. You can check up with us every now and then. But yeah, you don't have a stomach and you can't drink or anything.
How were you able to get nutrients?
IV nutrition.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and that was another thing that drove me crazy because I was psychologically hungry, starving. But the doctors were the doctors were like, you're getting 3,000 calories from the TCN, which is what it was called. But I don't get why you're hungry. As though hunger has no psychological component. But anyway, it was torture. I mean, there's no easy way to put it, to be in the outside world. And I had energy, I felt good. So, I wanted to go out and, months after being discharged from the hospital, I got the lead role in Oliver, the musical. I was so hungry and wanted to play with you that I started a chocolate business. So I learned karate. I did a million things. But, they were all ways to kind of get through. I was on very, autopilot mode because, to me, I was never ever someone that, like, kind of, like, curling up in bed and, like, pitying myself. I think maybe it comes from, like, I'm a very productive person. So I would try to get depressed and sad, but then I would get really anxious because I wouldn't get anything done. And I think that comes from a deeper, you know, as a performer, like, what made me feel, like, the most rewarded was that I was making an impact. Like theater was how I connected with the outside world. And I think my biggest fear coming out of a coma was, like, oh, my God, I'm not going to be relevant anymore. So I really do think that filled me with this drive to just keep going, like, and keep creating, because I didn't want to have worked so hard to just end up as, like, a comatose patient. You know, I couldn't see my life just, like, turning out that way.
You didn't, I mean, you couldn't really relate to anybody because this hadn't happened to anybody else, right?
Right. I mean, it's so funny. Like, I remember, like, calling my friends in the hospital and, like, I was like, yeah, I can't eat or drink. And she was like, oh, I'm sorry. And I'm thinking in my head, like, when I'm telling you that, you actually have no idea what that means.
No idea. I've done some research about you in preparation for this show. I mean, and...
Oh, no.
Yeah, this is bad. Is it true that you weren't able to eat for 3 years?
It gets a little confusing because so after 3 years, I had my first bite of food. It was my 13th surgery, and that was a really genius surgery. You know, part of what took so long was, you know, they had to wait for my insides to stop leaking, but also you had to find a surgeon with enough nerve and creativity to figure out what the heck to do with me. I finally found a brilliant surgeon at Yale. Who did a 19-hour surgery, which is part one, and then another second part. And this was supposed to hook everything up, and it worked. And then I went to California, and my wound just literally exploded. And I had to be air-vacked back to Yale Medical Hospital for 3 months. Mm. And so that was the end of that. I ate for, like, a week. And then after that, it was 3 more years because I had developed fistulas, which is like, you know, an opening, you know, from the wound to the skin that shouldn't be there. And to this day, I still have these fistulas that won't heal. So, you know, typically they tell you if you develop a fistula after surgery, they say stop eating and drinking and let the body dry up and heal on its own. So I did that for years and years, and actually, you know, I wrote about this in my book that's coming out. Like, there were a few times that they would just tell me that, and they would say, you know, typically the fistula will heal if you stop eating and drinking for 2 to 3 weeks. And you can actually see on my blog, my old blog post, and I'm counting, it's depressing, because I go, day 20, day 21, day 22, and I go all the way up to day, like, 89 and 90, to the point where I just got so fed up, and I'm like, you know what, this is not going to heal, and I just ate and drank anyway, and so I still have these fistulas, which are terrible leakages, you know, but, like, you know, it came to the point of, do I want to sacrifice my quality of life and just wait for this thing that I don't even know will happen, or do I want to not, like, starve myself, and kind of, you know, so it was really kind of up to me, which was a very scary decision. But anyway, that's fast forwarding a bit. But hooking me up was not a perfect science.
No, and I've got so many questions in my head right now. I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
If it's okay with you, we're going to take a short break for just a minute, and then we're talking to Amy Allstriker, I hope I pronounced that correctly, who has this was years ago when you actually had this happen to you, and when we come back from the break, I want you to give a dateline kind of about, like, where you are now and how long ago that was. Is that okay?
Yeah, okay.
We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. We'll be right back.
Roll Tide.
Hi, this is Ryan Gorman representing Theta Tau, the professional co-ed engineering fraternity, and you're rocking out to 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone, and this is BJ Gunther. I'm live in the studio tonight, but the show has actually been recorded, and the topic tonight is PTSD, A Story of Hope and Resiliency, and my guest is Amy Ostreicher, and she's telling her story, which is pretty dramatic, about some of the health problems that she's had and how it led to resiliency. So we pause for a break, but then we're going to rejoin the interview, which was recorded last week.
You're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and tonight we're talking about PTSD, and it's really a story of hope. Our guest tonight is Amy Ostreicher, and she just got through explaining to us the trauma that she went through when literally her stomach exploded. I don't know any other way to state it. It's pretty graphic to say it that way, and it's really kind of hard for anyone to imagine that that can happen to a human being and you still be alive, Amy. How long ago was that? How many years ago was that?
So, this all happened on April 25th, 2005. And then, you know, my first braces was on my 21st birthday. And then a lot of surgeries and ups and downs followed when I could eat, I couldn't eat, I could eat, I couldn't eat. And then by 2011, I was back in Yale Hospital for 3 months, which was very scary for me because it was one of the first times I was in a hospital and I could see that even doctors, like, didn't know what to do with me. And it was kind of a waste of time. I hate saying this, but, you know, I was there so they could figure out, oh, my God, how do we heal these fistulas? Like, how do we make this better?
Uh-huh.
And so for 3 months, it didn't change. PTSD and hope.
Okay.
I was about to lose all hope altogether.
Yeah.
And then, my mom.
Were you very depressed at that time?
No. So that's the story I'm going to tell you now.
Uh-huh.
But I was just angry, and my mom started bringing me, like, cheap art supplies to the hospital. And I was always, like, creative, but I did, like, theater. You know, I didn't, you know, do art or anything. And I kind of had just nothing else to do, which is why, you know, my TED Talk, I talk about how, you know, a detour kind of forces us to explore new avenues. So I remember so vividly that first morning that I picked up a paintbrush. Like, it was extra, extra early before the doctors came in for rounds. And, like, I was so sad. It was just, like, just me, like, before the sun was, you know, coming up. And I remember just, like, taking that paintbrush and thinking, like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing, but, like, I'm feeling something. And,
uh-huh.
and I didn't know what else to do. You know, and it was really amazing how art really impacted me. You know, that I was scared to feel. And, like, I painted my tears. And
can you hear me, Amy? You're going in and out.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, but art is a beautiful way that we can still acknowledge our feelings, but they don't, like, you know, they're artistic, they're on the canvas. It's just, art creates a beautiful container for me, and I think that's really what saved me. So I was in the hospital for 3 months, and I'd never picked up a paintbrush before, and by the time I was discharged, I had 70 paintings, and I put up my first art show. And I got to fast forward to now, to last week, actually, that I had a really full circle moment. One of my first paintings that I made in Yale, called Dancing Girl, Yale just made a new, beautiful oncology center in Connecticut. and they were having a call for art, and so I submitted it, and so they actually bought the piece back from me. It was such a full circle moment, and so, you know, they just had a grand reception on Tuesday, and I took my parents, and you know, they were showing all the artists where their art was, and we went into all the units and stuff. And you don't really go in those units, you know, unless you're a patient there.
Yeah.
So it was such a surreal feeling, you know, walking with my parents through these units, you know, this is really deep, really ideal, and, you know, we all had to talk about our art, and I said to everyone, I said, listen, you don't realize how valued this art is by, you know, all the patients here, because someone like me, that was stuck here for three months, like this little painting in this room, you know, that's all they're going to be looking at. So you are making such a difference. And I think that's such a great goal as an artist, to know that you can, listen, I still remember some of the paintings I walked by every day. So anyway, that was a cool kind of full circle moment. So,
the timeline. If any of our listeners are interested in looking at some of Amy's work, you can go to her website, yep. amyoef.com. I'm looking at some right now, and it is amazing. I mean, you're right. It's amazing that you didn't know you had this talent, really, did you?
You know what my talent is? That I don't care. I think that's honestly, seriously, the best gift I have. I've been painting now, like, 5 or 6 years. I've never taken, like, an art technique or anything like that. I just kind of paint whatever I feel, and I think, you know, I see something in my life that I'm not analyzing or judging, and I paint it just for me, but I think as a byproduct, it's very vulnerable, and people can relate to it. So anyway, in your timeline, you know, art was really the first kind of step towards expressing my feelings and not being, you know, petrified of them. The next year, I went back and I took all of the journal pages I had written over the years that to cope with not eating and drinking, and I put together a one-woman musical about my life, which I called A Gutless and Grateful, and I premiered that in 2012 in New York, and this was really the first time that I was talking about my story at all, and I kind of did a big move that, like, from not talking about it to, like, inviting, like, every New York theater critic, like, a huge opening. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect, but I was honestly stunned. I was stunned that people could relate to my story and that they appreciated it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to tell me so.
Oh, you're going back out again. I can't hear you.
I think that's really the best from people.
Are you there, Amy?
And the can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Mm-hmm. But you go in and out.
I realize that we heal when we have the compassion and understanding from others. And tell my story. Not only that, but to have other people relate to what I was saying in my story was such a normalizing thing. Like, I think back before my story and I felt like such a freak. You know, I was like, oh, I'm so weird. No one can understand what I've been through. And suddenly, you know, people come up to me and say, oh, you know, I related to this, like, frustrating time or this angry time or this uncertain time. You know, it kind of brought me into the human race again. And I think that's when I started to find, like, the upside of everything. And, you know, about, you know, resilience, traumatic growth, I think I didn't really start growing until I got my story out there and was able to connect with people.
Tell us a little bit. On your website, you talk a lot about being, and you mentioned it early, just a few minutes ago to me. Tell us what it means to be a detourist.
A detourist. Well, you have a detour in your life, and you don't run the other way. You stay open and try for that path to lead. You don't necessarily have to find the meaning of it right away. I don't believe, like, when things happen, you know, that we don't expect, we have to go right away, like, oh, okay, this happened for a reason. So, you know, sometimes they don't happen for a reason. Actually, the meaning is your job to do. You know, the meaning is something you assimilate day by day. Being a detourist just means that something in your life happens that you don't expect, and all you have to do is just put one foot in front of the other and just stay curious and embrace that path. You know, it's not what you do, but it will lead somewhere. An example for me for that is, you know, I think, you know, we all know that it's so easy talking about things like this work and stuff. So, like, I gave my TEDx talk on that, and that was great. And then, you know, I talked about the ending of it, where, like, I saw the meaning in my life where, you know, these detours had never happened. I never would have met my husband.
Right.
That was kind of the detour. And the next month, I filed for divorce, and I was in, like, emotional shambles. And I just kind of shared my whole detour, and the first thing I'm thinking is, wait, no, that's my detour. That can't happen. but then I took a step back and I'm like, you know what? Like, I really am upset right now,
mm-hmm.
and I don't love my detour. It kind of sucks. That like sometimes, you know, all you can do as like a detour is you trust your detour. You know, you don't necessarily have to love it or find it incredibly deep. You just trust it and know that, like, day by day, somehow it will lead to something else. And, you know, even with the little time that's passed, I already see, you know, that each budget that's following path is leading me to something else. So it's really, I think it hopefully is really about mindfulness, you know, and being willing to be in this moment, not thinking of the last one or the moment that you should have had, you know.
Talk a little bit, you know, trauma is a word that's thrown around a lot these days. You know, what does it mean for someone to be traumatized? And for those who are listening, our listening audience, who might be unfamiliar with the term, how would you describe post-traumatic stress disorder?
Well, post-traumatic stress disorder is, you know, basically defined by something like out of the range of human experience. And for me, you know, healing from trauma is all about, you know, actually, you know, it was explained to me very well many years ago that in life it's like kind of we're floating on a river. Like, you know, we're on that river and you have like your normal kind of rocks and pebbles like in your way, but, you know, you're on a river so you keep going. When a trauma comes, it's like this underwater kind of vortex, you know, that kind of sucks you in out of nowhere. And so the river is going, but you're just stuck in this circle. And no one can really relate to that. You're, like, out of time. You know, you're in, like, this other world where suddenly, like, nothing feels safe. And healing from trauma, I found it really about, you know, acknowledging not only in your mind but in your body that, you know, this trauma happens, you know, after a certain time, and, like, I'm not there right now, like, I'm here in the present moment. But, you know, the trauma kind of tricks you in that respect, and
mm-hmm.
that manifests in, like, flashbacks, intrusive memories, like, you know, I was really traumatized by everything medically that had happened to me.
Yeah.
But even more so, could eat and feel again, I started remembering the trauma of my sexual assault. And so now I had two things to kind of process. And so, you know, trauma kind of takes you out of your body. You know, it makes you not want to feel those emotions that you felt at that time of that really crazy experience. And so, like, I became very disassociated. Meaning, like, I was, like, hardly in my body. You know, like, I was very numb. I didn't want to feel anything, and so I was kind of just this robot. And, you know, I still deal with that, where sometimes I'll kind of shift in and out of, like, you know, I'll go into, like, numb mode where I'm, like, not feeling, or, like, for me, like, I like, pace around a lot so I don't have to, like, you know, feel anything.
Y'all
go to where, you know, so, like, sometimes I have to ground myself and remind myself, like, you know, there's nothing to be afraid of, like, right now. That's just Addie had memories of a former time that was unsafe, but now is safe. So healing from trauma is really about mindfulness. That's why you see a lot of, you know, there's a lot of programs for, like, yoga and trauma, you know, things to get you back in your body and now. Like, I love art therapy for trauma, you know, so you can, like, express what you're feeling in a safe way. So it's all about, you know, becoming comfortable with whatever is going on, like, right now.
We're coming up on another break. We're going to take another break, Amy. But when we come back, I noticed when I was doing my research a little bit about you coming to colleges and talking about your experience and your journey. And one of the things you mentioned is a resiliency toolbox. So when we come back, I want you to talk about that in detail, okay?
That's good.
Okay, we'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7. The Cap.
This is Andrew Goldberg from Family Guy, and you're listening to WVUA-FM Tuscaloosa. Roll Tide. Roll Tide. Roll Tide.
Hi, this is Eli Gold, the voice of the Crimson Tide, and I love 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone, and I'm BJ Gunther, and tonight we're playing a show that was recorded last week about PTSD and resiliency. My guest is Amy Ostreicher. This is our last segment for the show, and then I'll come back and do some announcements at the end of the show and talk a little bit about next week's show. So let's pick up where we left off.
Okay, we're back, and this is Brain Matters on 90.7, The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther. My guest tonight is Amy Ostreicher. She's talking about a traumatic event that happened to her. If you haven't been listening and you just tuned in, she actually had her stomach to explode when she was it prior to college or right when you began college?
This was right after I got my college acceptance letter.
Right.
So I was telling him. And after a nice little story of that is my headmaster actually came to the hospital and gave me like a private graduation ceremony. And I finally, so you know, I finally started college at 25. So it's never too late.
No, it's never too late. And if you have something, an obstacle in your way, and you still have that goal of graduating from college, it's never too, you know, you're never too old. Tell us a little bit.
Definitely.
I mentioned before the break that you mentioned sometimes when you're talking to college students about developing a resiliency toolbox. What does that mean? What is that?
Right. So I was doing a component program that I've been touring to colleges across the country about mental health, and I think that audience really, because talk about, you know, a time in life where, you know, you're in a situation, like anything could happen, and, you know, you need ways to stay resilient and stable and strong when things don't go as you expect, and not resort to all of, like, the tempting things that don't have to make decisions. So for me, you know, the biggest question I get asked in my talk back, even after I've told the whole story, how did you make it through all that? And so I developed my kind of recipe for resilience, which I didn't really define as I was going through it, but, you know, with hindsight and a bit of, you know, studying psychology, I realized why these things work. So I call it, like, my four hardcore skills. Number one is gratitude.
Okay.
And the reason why... So, like, I always feel like, don't roll your eyes. This is not like, oh, you know, if you're grateful for things, you'll be positive and things will be okay. This was actually for a very specific reason. It was after my 27th surgery, and I was stuck in the hospital because it was a total disaster, and I needed something to do with my hands. I was so bored and so angry and like, almost feeling guilty, like, oh, my God, why didn't I get this surgery? And so I took a piece of paper, and I labeled it A to Z, and I just made myself write something I was grateful for every letter. And it was super hard at first. It was really a stress, and I really didn't want to do it. But, like, every day I did it, it got a little easier.
Did you do that every day?
Every day. I made my mom do it, and we did it every day. And I realized that, you know, the more lists I made, you know, it was easier for me to see those things. And, you know, almost like I was manifesting that positivity. But even more than that, when I started seeing, like, you know, repeating themes come up in what I was grateful for, like, you know, nature and family and connection, and I realized that those things that I was grateful for, were my values. And I realized that, you know, when you know what you're grateful for, you know what you're about. And I think that's a very solid grounding force, because I think what happens in life, our biggest fear is that, like, you know, everything we know is kind of shaken up, and we forget who we are. But why those are so important is that they remind us that we're not those shaky circumstances. We're our values, and those values, you know, those stay constant, like your stomach explodes or not. You know,
right.
So that's why, you know, you need resilience and you need to know who you are. So that's gratitude. Number two is hope. And,
okay.
You know, hope is not just like this inspiring beam of light that comes on a mountaintop. It's a job, and sometimes it's lying to yourself. In literature, you call it one of the distance. You know, it can be hard work, but, you know, an example for me is, when I got out of the hospital and I still had no timeline if I could eat or drink again, I would make, you know, countdowns on, like, a whiteboard, like 7 days till I can eat again, 6 days. And when I got to zero, I'd start it over again, and I knew that I was just kind of making things up. But I also knew that it was my job to make it from one day to the next, and I had to do whatever I needed to do to do that. It kind of seems like endurance, you know, it's not, oh, it's fun, but it's creativity, and you definitely don't have to be an artist to be creative. I feel like we all need, and it could be cooking, it could be listening to music, but we need some way that we can feel safe expressing ourselves when we don't have the words, you know? Sometimes we're overrated. And we need something that can let us play. You know, particularly this kind of intuition at play, you know, where we can just kind of explore in a safe container. For me, a picture in that safe container. But it's really up to you. And then my last skill is stories.
Is what? Say that again.
Stories. Because like I said, like sharing my story was super therapeutic. But also, you have to remember, people see me all over the internet now, but it's I was going to lock my room, dirty outside world, journaling myself. But you're not a serious story. And in those I say, like, you're the best thing you can do is you share, you know, you can hear the stories of others because it's still putting in your awareness. And I don't like things on or memoirs. I'm talking like mythology, like literature. Because even hearing that, like, archetypal hero's journey, you know, getting that framework of awareness that people have overcome obstacles and slayed dragons and defeated demons. Inside, you know, it's very empowering your subconscious. And then when you're ready to kind of follow those steps yourself, you start remembering those stories and they give you some kind of subtle courage. And that's what I found. So yeah, that's my toolbox.
So the toolbox is, let me get this straight. Gratitude, hope, what's the third one?
Creativity.
Creativity, and the fourth one?
Stories. I guess I think that take better words and can make it like a fancy little acronym.
No, it's just that your phone is going in and out, you know? It's, yeah, that would be probably an easy way to remember it, wouldn't it? one of the things that I noticed is you call yourself a thriver as well as a survivor. What sets these terms apart in your experience?
Survivor is getting through. You have to be correct. Surviving is pushing through.
Yeah.
I have to do that and figuring out. Actually, the point you have to give yourself actual permission to thrive and to let go of that, you know, need to just like get through and actually take a moment, be mindful, and enjoy the gift of everything that you've kind of been through. You know, enjoy the skills that's built up in you and allow yourself to live. You know, and you know, sometimes it's hard because to survive, you get in your muscle memory, like, oh my God, I have to get through. And then thriving is when we allow ourselves to be like, wait, I don't have to get through anymore. I can just kind of use those things. And we're both really off place right now. But that mental shift is for trauma survivors is like very hard because it takes like kind of a surrender that, you know, you have to tell yourself, like, I'm safe now. Listen, you know, it's something I still struggle with. You know, I'll get into that kind of like, okay, I gotta push through.
Right.
And
right.
Then I have to, it's a mindset thing.
What about, before we go, I know you mentioned you've got a book coming out. Is this your first book?
It's my first book. Oh my God, I'm going to go on vacation for 10 years once this is done. With all the writing I do, I think I could easily get on the book like by now, but what's taking this book so long is I really wanted it to include like every, you know, the things that people don't know about my story. Like, you know, all the stories I made in my head, locked in my room, trying to get through because I really want people to that, like, exactly, like, it's one thing to say, oh, I made it for all these years without a sip of water, but, like, what actually went on? Like, how did I, so, like, I've been going through all thousands of journal pages, because I think there's some really fascinating stuff there, and also, like, how my family was affected. So, once this book is done, it is going to be my life's work for now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm super excited.
When is the release?
I'm aiming for December of next year.
Okay.
That's the goal. And in the meantime, you know, I'm touring my musical.
Yeah.
Colleges and institutions and organizations make it easier on me and send me a note if you want me to come to you.
Exactly, exactly. And I bet college students are a great audience because I bet they're very curious about how you got through what you got through. You know, I mean, anybody would be curious, but college students sometimes will ask the questions that other people won't ask, you know?
Yes, that was actually fun too. I started talking to high schoolers. And it's really cool. I wasn't sure how my message would resonate, but I actually did a Discord workshop, which are like those four skills I mentioned. Like, we do the creativity exercises based on it, and like, they really resonate with it, which is so cool for me.
I think you're close enough to their age that they can definitely relate to you.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. You know, I really appreciate you taking the time. You really, from your website, which again is amyoef.com. I mean, you seem extremely busy. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your day to talk to us because I think, you know, the students that are listening to the show, I hope that this will influence them. And I really don't know if there would have been any way, I don't think there was any way you could have prevented this from happening, but the message that you're trying to relay is when you will have obstacles in your life and you do have to have, you do have to become resilient. And your toolbox, it's a great suggestion. Will you include that detail in your book?
Oh, yeah. And also, for anyone listening that wants, like, a free little download, I have a little free creativity ebook on my website. If you look at it, my website is oef.com/create. There's a free download. And I don't know if anyone else is interested, but I also, have people that ask me, like, oh, how did you get a TED Talk? So I actually made an ebook for how to speak and feel confident sharing your story and learn more about TEDx Talk. And I can give you these links today, but that's amyoef.com/discover. And simply download for your viewing pleasure.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for everything you're trying to do to help other people.
Thank you.
With all you've gone through yourself, I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, you've been listening to a pre-recorded interview that I conducted with Amy Ostreicher last week. This is Brain Matters, and I apologize for the poor audio quality. Now, don't forget, our shows are recorded and podcasted on the Counseling Center's website at counseling.ua.edu. If you want to listen to past shows, just click on the Brain Matters icon, and it'll take you to some of those shows. You can also go to audioboom.com and type in WVUAFM to find the shows. And you can download the Crimson White app if you want to listen to the show live through their live streaming link. I want to make an announcement about an upcoming event that's very important. October the 3rd through the 9th is the University of Alabama Suicide Awareness Week. And during that week, we will be having activities held around campus daily to promote awareness of suicide while also promoting prevention. As the anchor event of UA's Suicide Awareness Week, the Counseling Center will host the 7th annual Out of the Darkness Tuscaloosa Community Walk, which will be held on Sunday, October 9th, 2016, from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Ferguson Center Plaza. Each year, the Counseling Center partners with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention to host the annual Tuscaloosa Community Walk, and with the help of sponsors and participants, the Out of the Darkness Tuscaloosa Community Walk will be able to reach its goal of $40,000 to bring mental health out of the darkness and support those in their fight against mental illnesses. The Counseling Center's mission is to promote student academic success and personal growth through our outreach services, such as the Out of the Darkness Walk. And the mission of the walk is to promote prevention and provide support to family and friends affected by a loved one's death due to suicide. To learn more about the activities during Suicide Awareness Week and to register for the walk, please go to www.counseling.ua.edu/aware.cfm. Again, that's www.counseling.ua.edu/aware.cfm. We hope to see you there. And there's a few people I always like to thank at the end of the show. Of course, our executive director at the Counseling Center, Dr. Lee Keyes, Terry Siggers of the Office of Student Media. Thank you so much for editing the show for tonight, Terry. My production assistants, Jordan Williams, Natalie Beck, and Dorothy Beck, and of course my colleagues at the Counseling Center, the WVUA staff, and my guest tonight, Amy Ostreicher. Next week's show is going to be a live show. It's going to be on life after breakup, and we see so many students at the Counseling Center who come in after a breakup of a relationship. So I think this would be very pertinent for anyone to listen to. The guest is Dr. Lisa Marie Bobby. She's out of Denver, Colorado, and she's been on several talk shows and written articles and books and whatnot. So that'll be a great show to listen to. But thanks for listening tonight. Again, I'm BJ Gunther, and you've been listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama. It's